Hey everyone, thanks for checking out another Patreon preview. If you want the full episode, become a patron at patreon.com/workstoppage. It's the only way that we get any money at all for doing this project, and we greatly, greatly appreciate it when you do support us. Otherwise, we hope that you enjoy this part 4 preview of the Elizabeth Gurley Flynn series. It is turning out to be a little longer than we had anticipated in the first place. So there's a lot of content coming up. And I guess without further ado, enjoy the preview. Solidarity.
This strike in 1913 was caused by the mill owners attempting to speed up the workers to increase profits.
Where have I seen that a million times before?
Damn, it's almost like you could apply a systemic analysis to this thing. Mm-hmm. And they wanted each weaver to have to mind 4 looms instead of their current 3 at the same pay. So
package delivery drivers right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, exactly. And that's the thing. It's like speed up comes in a lot of different forms. But effectively, this is them telling their staff they have to increase their workload by 33%, which is enormous.
That's a lot.
And so they did that in order to lay off a third of their workforce, because that was their basic idea. They're like, well, if we just make each one of these workers work an extra loom, we can cut a third of them loose and we'll make so much more money. It'll be great.
Oh, yeah, Dollar General classic. Found out what the logical conclusion of that is.
Yeah, well, and now every university campus in the country is trying to find the even more theoretical abstract, the university without students or faculty. It's pure profit. Somehow.
They already exist. It's called a real estate company.
But yeah, and so in the process of talking with these workers who were just fed up with this attempt at speed up, she found one girl at the mill who worked at a ribbon plant who was overworked so much she was paid $1 for producing 1,000 yards of ribbon.
That is so much. And I mean, like, I think today
it's over half a mile.
Yeah. I think, you know, we might not think of it the same because of the mechanized ways in which textiles are made these days. And like, oh, well, you know, you can get, you know, so much of this for so little or whatever. But like, these are made like by people. Like, mostly, like, partially by hand. I mean, sure, the looms are kind of mechanized, but, like, still, it is a lot more work to produce these sorts of commodities.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am trying to Google... Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm Googling photos of early 1900s ribbon mills, and they don't just look incredibly huge and difficult to operate. They also look pretty fucking dangerous.
Oh, yeah. No, all of these machines are super dangerous. There's like... And at this point, there are no safety protections. Like,
right.
At this point, they also don't clean them very often either, which makes them more dangerous.
Oh, so they could, in addition to the fact that they could, like, stab you or chop off a finger, they might also just catch fire.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then also, this is where, like, this is, we talked about how people were inhaling, like, cotton dust and other sorts of fabric dust. I'm guessing that these plants are still, this is the time where this is rampant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Very much a major problem in this industry. And so as they launched their strike, the workers of the silk mills in Paterson demanded not just a rescinding of the speed up, but an 8-hour day for all workers and a raise of $1 a week. At the time, workers averaged well under $10 a week at the time. So while $1 a week, it's like, that's like nothing. That's a 10% raise for the workers at this point.
Which is a pretty big ask in the face of the initial policy being, we're going to fire a third of you.
Well, and when unions are not legal.
Right.
So like, yeah. So they're making a very strong demand. And they did it based on incredible numbers, because 25,000 workers, mostly recent European immigrants, were involved in this strike.
Oh, okay, so again, we're another situation where there were probably a shitload of translators facilitating this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so when Carlo Tresca and Elizabeth Gurley Flynn arrived to speak at a meeting of the workers in Paterson on February 25th, 1913, they were immediately arrested as outside agitators, along with Patrick Quinlan of the Socialist Party.
Cool name.
Which, congratulations, fellow outside agitators. They were released on bail, But then the next time they arrived in town, they were immediately rearrested. And the charge that they were with, because, you know, technically being an outside agitator, whatever that means, is not illegal. And so they were indicted for, quote, conspiracy to cause an unlawful assemblage of persons, as well as to raucously and riotously and tumultuously disturb the peace of New Jersey.
Oh, not the peace of New Jersey.
Oh, anything but an unlawful assemblage of persons. I'm sorry. Yeah, like, it's so fucking ridiculous because it's like, you know that the same freaks who call themselves like constitutional originalists are also like the first fucking ones who were like, oh, you cannot gather in large groups. Absolutely fucking not.
I just love the idea of being like, oh yeah, what are you in for? Tumultuously disturbing the peace of New Jersey.
Raucously and riotously and tumultuously disturbing the peace.
That's right. In technical terms, I'm in for conspiracy to cause an unlawful assemblage of persons. It's so funny. Conspiracy with whom? Yeah, well, the boss is going to love this if we all gather in the streets.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, it's like, this is so goofy because of the language, but like, that's when they charge people today for organized protests with conspiracy to riot, that's the exact same thing.
Yeah,
it's a shorthand.
Yeah, it's the shorter version of it.
Well, and it has a fancy little scare word in it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because if you tell people somebody was going to cause an unlawful assemblage of persons, they're going to be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Hey, buddy, I tailgate every Friday and Saturday night.
Yeah, but if you're like, oh, they were trying to cause a riot, then people be like, oh, I don't know, I heard riots were bad.
You mean like a Luke Bryant concert?
Jesus Christ. Oh, fucking Country Fest around here is like dropping a bomb on Foxborough every year.
Oh, yeah. When huge country artists came to Pittsburgh, or Pittsburgh either won or lost the Super Bowl, it honestly did like 25 times more damage to the city than any of the protests ever did.
Yeah. And so after being arrested a second time, they were again released on bail and continued their organizing work. So nice job, cops, doing a whole lot. Thankfully, they were able to evade further detentions.
Well, thank goodness. I mean, it's been enough times by this point.
Yeah, I mean, for the moment.
Right.
And so the mill owners then decided to use their control of the city government to pressure small business owners who might help the workers. Halls in Patterson that allowed IWW meetings were threatened with having their liquor licenses revoked, forcing organizers to rent a house to use for meetings.
That is wild. Like, you can't, your bar cannot have these criminal anarchists or whatever it is show up and talk, or we're going to make it so that you can't run your business.
But I mean, this does happen. I mean, still today, you have places that get pressured, you know. I mean, think about it. How many libraries have been pressured by their government not to host, like, Drag Time Story Hour?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, not even a fucking political event. Like, it's a story time thing for kids. And yet, because of the fascist, like, attacks on trans people in the U.S., we have, you know, all these public institutions being pressured not to do that. So, I mean,
yeah,
long history of this kind of censorship, and it's also directly in line with the panic right now about all the students fighting against the genocide, where you have all the freaks crawling out of the woodwork to be like, they should never be allowed to have a job again, they should be buried under the earth and all this, like, and there's this attempt, because they know they're like siding with evil and that like nobody's going to agree with them, to just be like, we have to somehow wall them off from all of society, or people will hear the things they are saying that are true and appeal to their humanity.
Yeah, I saw the image and comment of like, this public university paid for with public dollars is entirely barricaded and closed.
Oh, yeah,
and has nobody on
CCNY.
It. Yeah.
It's literally part of the city, and they're like, no, you can't use the commons. And I'm just like, hey, look, they did the thing they always do, the enclosure. It's all they know how to do. It's enclosure and land theft and brutality for fucking 500 years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, don't forget bog standard financial crime.
Well, yes. But anyways, back to the story. So, you know, obviously, in addition to these threats against small businesses, the state cracked down hard on the workers, beating picketers savagely and arresting over 1,000 during the 6 months of the strike. Also, by the way, the strike went on for 6 months. They also held kangaroo courts to railroad innocent organizers on bullshit trumped up charges. Patrick Quinlan of the aforementioned Socialist Party was convicted and sentenced to 2 to 7 years in prison for inciting a riot by speaking at an organizing rally. In addition to being a brazen violation of any sort of concept of free speech, the most wild part about that charge is that Quinlan was arrested before he actually had an opportunity to speak to the crowd, raising the question of how he could have incited anyone to anything.
Raising the question of how in the early 1900s did the police have access to precogs?
Yeah, well, and that's a great question, because in the trial, multiple police officers swore they saw him speak. So I don't know if these guys were all on mushrooms, but like
they had a mass hallucination because they all touched some fentanyl.
Yeah,
Bayer heroin.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's right.
And so again, despite the fact that he never actually spoke and could not have possibly incited the riot, because of the testimony of these officers, Quinlan was imprisoned on lies contradicted by the testimony of many of the thousands who had attended the rally. And he spent 3 years in New Jersey prison for causing a riot at an event he did not speak at. Two other prominent socialist organizers, including a newspaper editor, were similarly imprisoned during the strike under the state's criminal anarchy law.
I love how vague that is.
There's a bunch of states that had those at the time, a criminal anarchy or criminal syndicalism chart.
That's even funnier.
These were basically specifically anti-IWW laws.
Right.
Well, and I mean, I think the syndicalism one makes more sense, because at least there's an association with like unions and like labor control, but criminal anarchy, what the fuck does that even mean? Anarchists can't even pin down all of the ways in which they disagree with each other.
Anarchy is when you drink a beer in the street, Eric O'Malatesta.
Well, they would definitely have arrested you for doing that.
Yes.
If you were at the strike. So, unsurprisingly, while they were able to dodge the cops for getting arrested just for showing up in town, by being out on the picket line, Flynn, as well as many other organizers, and once he arrived and joined the strike as well, Big Bill Haywood, were also arrested as part of the strike. And they both petitioned to have their trials held outside Patterson, as they could clearly not receive a fair trial. And that actually turned out to be a very important strategic move,
mm-hmm.
because they advocated for multiple other folks who were charged. Like, they're like, you also need to fight for a change of venue, because they own the courts here. You're not going to get a fair trial. And there's a lot of folks that were like, no, I'm going to use this as to make my stand in the witness box. And that can be an effective political tool. In this case, I don't think it was. And a lot of those folks ended up spending real time in prison, while the folks who moved, who were able to actually take their advice, ended up largely getting acquitted.
So, yeah, I don't know. There's a certain instinct towards martyrdom that is almost never worth pursuing, because like, whatever is your cause, you're worth more to it alive, I promise you.
Or outside of jail, at least.
Yeah,
you know?
Or outside of jail, or yeah, just like active, you know.
Yeah. And yeah, so
don't put yourself at a disadvantage on purpose.
Correct. I think Lao Tzu said that.
That's right. That's most of what the art of war is.
Yeah, trick your opponent. Great stuff, dude.
You know, when you're fighting a war, you don't have to tell the truth to your enemy.
Try to win.
Thank you.
Sing one song of the